presentations you're seeing today will be available on our website, and Stacy's going to show you how to get there. I'm going to hand the mic to her.
Okay, so if anybody wants to get copies of today's presentations, you can go to our website, puc.sd.gov, and I'm there at our homepage now. If you go to the left-hand side and you click on PUC Events, and then you'll see our South Dakota-North Dakota Pipeline Safety Seminar. You can click on that, and then you have to click on the agenda, this little blue agenda word here. And if you click on that, you'll get to our agenda, and then we put the presentations out there. It's very hard to see it on this screen, but you can see presentation, it's in blue. And then you click on that, and you can pull up the actual presentation. The presentations that are not on there today will be there shortly after the conference. So we just wanted to show you that so you know where to go to get those presentations.
Thanks, Stacy.
That's good. Yeah, not a little recorded.
Thanks, Dan, to you for the refreshments. And now we're at the 10 a.m. agenda item, which is damage prevention and public awareness. And our presenter is Leonard Steiner, the state liaison with the PHMSA Office of Pipeline Safety Central Region.
How does that sound? Doesn't sound right, does it? So we'll turn up your volume.
Crank him up.
We've got to practice a little bit here. How about this? Can you hear me back there? Is that okay? I don't want to shout and holler, but
they can't hear you. That's why nobody's nodding.
Thank you very much. Now let's see what we got here. Okay. There's my name. Let me tell you before we get into it, what we're going to talk about for the time being in this presentation is the public awareness program under 192.616. However, before we do, let me start off by telling you how the federal interacts with the state, or the state interacts with the federal, and what the delineation of responsibilities are. I work for the federal government. My title is state liaison. My job is to, number one, evaluate the states to determine if they are meeting the compliance of what we want them to inspect, the intrastate, in this case, gas pipelines in North and South Dakota, to get their share of the federal funding that we give it to them. We don't give it to them, they earn it. So I come up every year and I see, in this case, Nathan. Hopefully he'll be there a few more years yet. But Martin before that. And we go through, and I have like a 17-page evaluation sheet. I go through their records. I see what they inspected. I see the non-compliances that they issued out there, the letters that they sent out, if they did any fines. And then I looked at the they have to have a procedures manual. They call it an inspection plan. I take a look at that. It's their O&M on how they're going to inspect you as the intrastate gas pipelines. I know TransCanada is here. That's a liquid line. That's under our jurisdiction. I see Northern Natural Gas is here. That's K gas transmission line interstate. That's under our jurisdiction. So, but I'm glad to have you here. So if you don't get, if I don't come back to you, this is designed for the intrastate gas, both distribution and transmission lines. So the liquid lines may not get a lot out of it, but take a little harsh to it. So I come in and take a look at it, and they get their money. The state, under the law, under the federal law, and it says it in there, that they have pretty much of a full jurisdiction of intrastate gas, in this case, gas pipelines in South Dakota. We cannot just come in and say, whoa, wait a minute. They didn't inspect MDU correctly. They didn't inspect MDU adequately. They didn't inspect Watertown and come in there and inspect you and start issuing you non-compliances because that's their job. If we don't like the way they do, we do one of two things. We either decrease our funding or we take the program away from them. We probably won't take the program away from them, but we will decrease their funding. So when they come down, they have full latitude to interpret regulations, to enforce regulations within the guidelines that we give them. So if they give an interpretation to you, that interpretation is their interpretation, and we don't do anything with it as long as it is not contrary to an interpretation that the federal government gives. One of the biggest things is, what is a transmission line versus a distribution line? There isn't a real good delineation between that. So when it comes to the distribution side, that's pretty much state functions. We give it to the states and they say, look at it there, and you make the determination if that is transmission or distribution, and we go with it as long as it's not contrary to anything that we've said. We don't have much for interpretations on the definition of transmission lines. Except we know that 20% of SMICE is definitely a transmission line. So you call me up and say to me, I don't understand what he's doing there. Can he really do that? And I'll say, yeah, he has jurisdiction over you as an intrastate gas pipeline, distribution, transmission, or gathering lines. So we don't get in there between that. Now, if you call me up, and you can call me up, and I'll talk to you about it, but then I always refer you back to, in this case, Nathan, so that you have to work out your disagreement with them, because they are the jurisdictional people. Regulations always come by. They basically have to have, they can have any set of regulations, as long as those regulations are the same, pretty much the same as the federal regulations or more stringent. An example of it is they can have a regulation that says you will do leakage surveys twice a year. That's a requirement. Let's say if that's a requirement in South Dakota and the federal government says you'll do them at least once a year, they say you have to do them at least twice a year, not to exceed 7.5 months. That's the way they want to do it in South Dakota. We cannot come in and override that. That's how they can do that. So that's the reason why, as operators, any operator, you need to stay with any changes in the regulations, read them through, give your input. And how do you give your input? Number one, you give them through the AGA, American Gas Association. You give them through the transmission lines. Whatever any of those organizations are that are in a sense for the for pipelines to help develop, and it's any organization. I want to say that, and I encourage you to join those types of organizations. In Nebraska, let's see, Nebraska League of Municipalities has a section on pipelines that they do a lot of work in. So. Don't just say, well, here's a new regulation and we're going to do it. If you can't live with the regulation, get in there and give your input from the very get-go. I inspect 12 states and I see a lot of things out there. I see a lot of things that make me go, wow. And you'd be surprised how many things amaze me some of them amaze me good, and how many of them amaze me bad. And I'll go out, and I'll talk to somebody, and I'll say, you know, over in Kansas they do this, or in Missouri they do this, and they'll go, what? You can't do that. That's against the law. And I'll say, tell me in the regulations where that's against the regulations. And they'll say, well, I guess not. Example, I was in, I'm going to say Ohio. And I said, you know, it's now called Source Gas, but it used to be Kinder Morgan in Nebraska. They have, I don't know what, 200-300 miles of low pressure, I don't want to say low pressure, but 300-pound pressure transmission lines that lay on top of the ground. And they go, what? You can't have pipelines laying on top of the ground. And I'll say, I'll show you 300 miles if you want to go take a look at it. And I says, tell me in the regulation where it says you have to bury your pipeline. Show me. And they'll go, I guess it's not there. Nobody starts to think about other things that are happening around here. And so, Source Gas in Nebraska has a program where they want to bury all. They're actually burying pipelines in there now. And they're doing, you know, 20, 30, 40 miles a year. And as a matter of fact, we got an email from one guy, and he said, I punctured the above ground line in there, and he said, they're saying that I'm at fault. Can you give me any help? And basically, we're saying, well, we're sorry, we're not lawyers, we're not giving you legal advice. Did you excavate according to the law? He said, I didn't excavate according to the law. I don't know what he did, but he punctured the line, and we have to say, you've got to go back and work on it. So that's an above-ground thing that we run into in one state, and the next state we may not run into them. So, like I said, I see a lot of everything. The other thing that I always like to talk about when I talk to groups of pipeliners that operate any type of pipelines is that I like to talk about, and I was taught, and Nathan has, and of course, Mr. Wayne St. Germain, and he's really an excellent instructor. I've known him for many years, and I enjoyed listening to him. But we know a guy named Frank Russo, and he always talks about a prudent professional. Now, the regulations are out there for a purpose. They're for a purpose for you to operate them at a safe level or an acceptable by most people in the world at the safe level. They're very performance oriented. They don't tell you this is what you got to do here and this is what you got to do here. They tell you these are some of the things that you need to do. And then he says the prudent professional is the one who will do this or this or this. And everybody in this room is what I would call a professional. They work on pipelines. They know what they're supposed to do. They know the requirements. And I hope everybody here is a prudent professional by saying, at my level, I will do what I expect to be safe, what people like me with education and experience would say they would do, that my boss thinks I ought to do, the general public thinks I ought to do, and the inspectors think I ought to do. That's a real open-ended definition of a prudent professional. But are you doing everything that you think would be safe? Now, we've got to stop somewhere because we have not all the money in the world to do a leak survey every week. But even the leakage survey person goes out and he starts to look for a leak and he can't find it. How long should that leak survey or leak detection technician stay there to look for that leak if there's a report of it? But he should make every effort to find it if he thinks it's there. At some point, if he can't find it, he becomes the prudent professional and he says, I can't find the leak, I've got to walk away. So don't stop just because, well, looks like it's a bad call, I'm going to walk away. So now when we get into the public awareness, I think a lot of things are going to be the prudent professional. And the prudent professional is everybody in here when it comes to public awareness. You all work at different levels. when you come to the public awareness. What's the purpose of the public awareness? I think the title really means it. And the regulation starts. Get your book out. See, this is the first time we're going to do it. Go to 192.616. Covers just a little over a page. You don't need to read all of the stuff in there. Yes, you should read all of it, but some of it is sort of telling you the gist of it. Under A there, it tells you each operator. Must develop and implement a written continuing public education program. It goes on down and talks a little bit about it. And what do they say? In B, it says the operator's program must follow the general program and recommendations of API RP 162, that's the American Petroleum Institute recommended practice 1162. And assess the unique attributes and characteristics of the operator's pipelines and facilities. That means that you need this book right here. How many people have this book? How many people have seen this book? How many people haven't seen the book? Don't be bashful. Raise your hand if you haven't seen the book. Now, it looks kind of thick, but I always like to break it down into simple stuff. It's 29 pages. It's got a bunch of index at the front. Starts in page there, goes to page 29. But page 29, still got this much. And this is all appendices. You need to read it, but it's not that important compared to the very first part of it. It tells you what you need to do to provide awareness to the public so that they won't damage your pipeline. Now, who is the public? Who do you target under 616? Doesn't say in the regulations, so that's the reason why you have to go to 1162. Doesn't say anything in there about who you must target. Public awareness objectives. The public awareness program should communicate relevant information to the following stakeholder audiences. The affected public. Who's the affected public? That's just about everybody except. And then they have some except the local public officials, which that's a separate paragraph. Emergency officials, that's a separate paragraph. And excavators. Everybody in the world ought to know about your pipeline. Not the stuff about how you operate it, not the stuff about how much money you make off it, not the stuff how many customers you have. That's business stuff. But we want to do the safety side of it. We want to protect your pipeline so that it doesn't hurt the public and you target the at least the four categories you talk about that I just read to you. Yeah, let me get this here. The thing about it is that this is very generic in a sense. It tells you that you need to develop the program. Need to implement the program, and then you need to evaluate the program. Well, before you do, you want to think about some of the things you're going to be looking at. What do you see there? What do you see there? Camels? see is not necessarily what you think you see is not necessarily what you see. That right there, that's not a camel. That's a shadow of a camel. That's the camel right there. This is taken at sunset. So sometimes what you see or what people see is the result of something else. Sometimes what you hear isn't always exactly what you hear. And sometimes what you say is not always what you think you said. Just the same as this picture right here. Kind of interesting, though. We're going to talk about some working together on the damage prevention. Public awareness is more public awareness than it is damage prevention. However, I always want to talk about it, because I'm going to talk about public awareness damage prevention today. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about your annual reports. And then I'm also going to talk about investigation of accidents and failures. You have less accidents and failures if your damage prevention and public awareness program is good. And you'll have less numbers to put on your annual report because you have less leaks because you've worked hard and had a good public awareness damage prevention program. And you know what to put on your annual report because you have a good investigation of accidents and incidents, or accidents and failures. The program, so when you go through this, throw every idea out there possible. Just throw out anything. You say, how are we going to communicate to the public? Right? And of course, you always know the bill stuffers, the mailings, and things like that. Maybe throw in a newspaper article, or maybe a radio spot. Television's too expensive. Probably a radio spot, maybe. But are there some other ideas out there? Nathan told me about, Stacy was talking about one operator saying that I think we ought to put some notices at the local elevator, grain elevator for farmers. Was it you who said that? Was you said that? You?
If it was a good one, yeah, I said it.
It was a good one. I don't know what she said. But she said that the transmission company was working at a farm in a community. So put some notices around grain elevators. You know, farmers come in and deliver grain, and they're waiting in line or sitting around there like that. They'll say, what's this? FSA offices are good. Put some notices out there. It can be public awareness, damage prevention, one call. Put them all together. So think of some of the ways of doing that. Think outside the box. One of the things that you start working at, you say, man, I'm going to put a lot of stuff in there. One of the things that will happen is sometimes it's too much information at a time. I like to use the example. I have a farm in southeast corner of Nebraska, and I've got a refined products pipeline going past the corner of my farm about 1,000 yards. So I get this public awareness notice from a contractor for about 12 transmission operators, both gas, both liquid, both gas and liquid on there, and I go through there, I open this thing up, and now I know what it is, and I read it because I'm interested in it. But I said, and the reason why, because I had a friend that lived about 12 miles away, and it was a different pipeline company, and she got the same notice. And she looked at it and, said, and threw it away. Because she said, pipelines, what's that? Not affecting me. And it was a gas transmission line that goes about 2 miles away from her house. And it's a smaller one. But anyhow, it's like, didn't make any difference to her, and just thrown it away. So it failed to do its job. Then I started reading through it, too much information, and I'm an older guy, and I can't see very well. And man, that writing was really small. Boy, was it small. And I lost interest real fast, but I went ahead and read through it. And then I flipped it over on the other side, and it was Spanish on the other side. I said, whoa. So I had this big piece of paper, English on one side, Spanish on the other side. In my area, Spanish is not the predominant language. It's not even really used. There are a few Hispanics in there, but they can read and write English probably as good as I. So it's like, well, I got twice as much information as I need. So then I started reading through it, and it told me how to recognize the signs, but it didn't tell me what company was close to my pilot, was close to my thing. There was about 12 of them. And they were major transmission companies. This one was not as major as the others, but this was a smaller transmission company. I don't know which one it was. And then of course, they said, you want to send in this card. And the question was, is there anything you don't understand about this? And they didn't ask me for an evaluation of what I thought of the paper they sent it to me. They said, do you understand what it's all about? So I didn't send it in because there wasn't any questions in there that I thought make any difference. But why didn't they make it smaller and tailor it to this area of the country, or this area of the state, and this area of the state, and this area of the state? Narrow the companies down to the ones that I'm really interested in. Put only the information in a large enough print that I can read it, and then have me an evaluation that when it goes to 1162, it can really let you evaluate how well your damage prevention public awareness program is. I personally think this was a bad mail. I don't inspect those operators, so I don't follow up. But I probably will turn it over to others in our office that do inspect them. And some of those pipelines weren't even in the central region. We don't inspect them. We're on that consortium. So that's the reason why. Timing of the mailings, how often do you mail them? You put it all in one mailer? You take a look at that. To me, this one mailer is the only one that I get on that pipeline. That's the only one I get. And to me, it didn't tell me a lot. Now, I know what was going on out there, but let's say to my neighbor there, he probably looked at it and said, pipeline, throw it away. Didn't make a lot of difference. I don't know where they were going at either. Now, it did go to me because I happened to be living in the vicinity of it, and my friend was living in the vicinity of it. But I don't know if it went to the school. And if it goes to the school, who does it go to in the school? Does it go to the superintendent, principal? Does it go to the school board? Or does it go to the chief custodian? Or should it go a copy to each one of them? Because the school board looks at it and gives it to the superintendent and says, here, take care of that. And the superintendent says, well, it must be a legal requirement, and he throws it away. The school board has to ensure that the policy is made how to maybe evacuate a school. The superintendent and principal must make policies of when and how they'll evacuate there. And the custodian and the teachers, the custodian must have routes of exit, and the teachers must be taught how, when, and what they're supposed to do if they have to do an evacuation. But only one person gets it and maybe reads it and says, I don't understand this, and never does it because they're so busy. Go to other people. Emergency responders. My nephew was a training officer for a volunteer fire department. He called me up. He said, can you tell me about pipelines? And I went up there and I tried to tell him what I could. And I wanted to stay with the practicality of what the firefighters really need to know. Did firefighters need to have me come in, or you, as prudent professionals, go in and start talking about, well, this is the property of gasoline, this is the property of natural gas, this is the property of this or that or stuff like that? They learn that other places. They learn that in fire schools and stuff like that. What you need to tell them is the stuff that they need to know to go to the pipeline. Do they need to have an exact map of where that pipeline is at? No, they don't need to have an exact map of that. They need to know general areas of it, because if you have an accident or an incident on that pipeline, they will know where it's at. First off, they'll either see the fire, see the smell, have the smell, or somebody will say, man, there's a lot of oil coming down that creek. So you don't need to have the one, but you need to talk to them about that, of how you coordinate with them. I also told him, I said, firefighters, do not try to operate pipelines. You are not to operate pipelines. You are to go out and assist the pipeline operator in their emergency response. Another section, right, of what we are talking about, emergency response. What's it say under... under liaison with public officials, it says the capabilities of each side of it. How capable is some transmission company that has diesel fuel pumped through there and they have a rupture and there's diesel fuel coming out? How fast can they respond to possibly making small dams or something like that to keep diesel fuel from going into a river or a creek? Maybe the fire department can do that. They know locally, small fire departments, they know people out there that have dozers, and you might be surprised how quickly they can get some heavy equipment out there. But you talk to them a little bit. How often do you have to go meet them? Well, as often as necessary. Once a year, every 2 years, every 3 years. But at least do something. Who should know about this? About public awareness? 2-4-7. As members of communities and community service organizations, informed employees, a pipeline operator can play an important role in promoting public awareness. How many of your employees happen to belong to the Kiwanis, to the Rotary, EPA? There's where your schools come in. Do you allow them to talk about pipeline safety if they want to, or that organization wants to have somebody to stop in? Remember, everybody here is a prudent professional. So as a manager in that company, do you allow your technicians to talk about leakage surveys, things like that? Not trying to hit everything, just going through part of this. Now we have to go back and do some tracking to see how well we're doing. There's a chart in here. It tells you implement, follow through, evaluate, track, see what we're doing. Tracking can be a variety of things. It can be anything you have. But you need to track it, document it, so you can analyze it. I had something to say there. Forgot what it was now. Well, this is back to the data. How many near misses have you had on your pipeline? How many nicks have you had on your pipeline from an excavator? Has anybody here kept track of that? Some of you probably have. I'm sure you have. Is that an issue? And have certain excavators been doing that more than anything else? Sometimes a nick can be as bad, and the general public doesn't understand that. that a nick on a pipeline can be almost as bad as a puncture, because it will become maybe a rupture in 15 years from now. And in 15 years from now, there might have been a new house built 50 feet from that pipeline. So you have to explain that to them. Explain it to them. And you can be dead in the water. This is my dead mouse. How are you gathering data? Aerial patrols. I know some of you don't do aerial patrols, but some of you do. How often, this is interesting for gas pipeline operators that strictly think about it. How often do you have to do a patrol on a transmission line? How often do you have to, first of all, let's do how often do you have to do a patrol on a distribution line? What? As often as necessary, right? So at least once a year, except inside business districts. How often do you have to do an aerial patrol on a gas transmission line? Once a year, right? How often do you have to do a patrol on a liquids line?
26 times a year.
26 times a year, right. Meaning basically, gas operators, you don't realize that those liquid people over there are doing, in this case, probably an aerial patrol every 2 weeks. Big difference. Have you looked at how many locates you had? And again, no response tickets. How many near misses? We're talking about the near misses. Near misses, nicks. How many pipelines have been hit and been covered over? And then you have to take a look at the analysis. BERT is an AGA program where they'd like to have you report your damages. It's supposed to be it is anonymous. They don't take your names, and they won't release your names. You put it in there as a name, but they won't release your name. We encourage that. What we try to do is, it's available for states and federal people. We try to look at trends to see if there are certain kinds of activities are causing more problems, certain kind of pipes, certain kind of components, certain areas. Unfortunately, it's not required, so we only get those who want to volunteer. Now we're starting into the thought process. This is a good process. Kind of corny in a way, but it's really true. The Washington Monument is disintegrating, and why? Because we've been using too many harsh chemicals. Why have they been using too many harsh chemicals? To clean up the pigeon poop. Why are there so many pigeons? Because they eat the spiders, and there's lots of spiders at the monument. Why are there so many spiders? Well, they eat gnats, and there's a lot of gnats. Why are there so many gnats? Because they come out at dusk time and they go to the lights. What's the solution? Turn the lights on a little later time. Have you started looking at your public awareness programs and said, these are some things that are happening and this is what's causing it, but why are we doing this and why are we doing that? Why are we doing that? And pretty soon, all of a sudden, you come down to the simple solution. It's kind of like the old thing about, you ever seen the joke about where, first off, it's a swing, and first it's two ropes with a cage on, and then there's two ropes with something else on, and then two ropes with something else on, and it's got safety belts on, and it's got rubber paddings on it, and what the kid wanted was just one rope with a tire on it. Maybe that's what you ought to do to let this. You been out looking at the stakeholders, been talking to them. Damage prevention. How many people here have talked to their one call center? How many people here know who to call at the one call center? How many people have talked to the one call center about an issue? Okay. Evidently, the other people haven't had an issue, right? You know, you can get data from the one call center, right? The one call center will give you data about who's working where, things like that. Kansas has the ability to go into the one call, but the Kansas pipeline safety folks have the ability to go into the one call center's database, and they can pick up any request for locates as soon as they're in the data, into the computer. So when the program managers are, I think there's only him and one other person who can get in there, but they can go in and go like this, and they can say, in Shawnee County, these are the people that have locate requests that they can start working today. So one of the first things that can happen is somebody hits a pipeline down in so-and-so county. You can go in and says, let me look and see what kind of locate request was done. When was it done? And we'll start immediately right there. And we're going to get out and gather information immediately. So talk to your one call center. Valuable source of your damage prevention. That's the first start of a lot of your damage prevention is a one call. Sometimes people send out diagrams. If you send out a diagram, it's just going to be like that piece of paper or that notice that came to me. Wow. Well, I don't see where I fit in. So you keep it simple. Keep it simple. But sometimes things get complex because this is what is actually under a dig in. I don't know if you can see it over there very much. Sorry if I stepped in front of you. Ooh. Must assess the program. See where you can make the changes. I'm going to read this all to you, but this is basically the important parts of the program, getting it in there. Nathan will be by and inspect them. There's not been a lot of inspection done, I think, from the state level, simply because they'd like to receive more guidelines from the federal level. And the federal level is inspecting programs and finding out the direction to go, where to improve. The states are out there looking for that. Measuring effectiveness. This is where I really think that how well are you going to measure the effectiveness? How are you going to measure the effectiveness of your program? It says in 1162, what do you do? One of the things is going the wrong way. You notice to track the number of officials or emergency responders who attend emergency response exercises. Spend a lot of time. You don't need to read it all. How many? I know you got your 1162s at home. But you may want to do a face-to-face survey. This one is an example of one for emergency officials. You get out there, you go to an emergency and the fire department's out there and it's kind of all over with, you go talk to the chief or the incident commander. Let's say it's a volunteer fire department, get to the chief and say, I'd like to talk to you, and you ask him these questions. And remember, the proven professional can be that local technician who can fill this out and put it back in. Here's a survey for an affected public. The proven professional who belongs to the PPA or the proven professional who belongs to the Kiwanis can say, you know, pipelines are out there, and don't have to give them a lot of information, but say, hey, would you fill out these questions tonight right here when I'm doing that, and let's walk away and I'll go home and we appreciate it. Same way with public officials. Excavators. A lot of different excavator organizations. And you don't have to give it to all of them. You don't have to do all of them. You just do as many as you can get together. Many of them that will really cooperate with you. Who will actually give you an answer and try to tell them, we want to know what's going on out there, what you're thinking about. Nobody's coming around and asking me about my notice. This is a little more of it. These are some ideas. The other thing is, just because we've done it that way doesn't mean it's the best thing. You know, the worst answer that I hate to see is I've been out and inspecting an operator with a state inspector, and they'll say, well, we've always done it that way. And I said, maybe you've done it that way wrong for all this time. How about maybe taking another way of looking at it? I'm not going to tell them outright that they're wrong, unless it's the inspector that decides that. But maybe there's a better way. Maybe they're not completely right. What's the regulation say about a report of a leak? What do you have to do? What's the regulation say? Says, if you have the report of a leak coming into your call center, what do you have to do? Come on, give me an answer. Somebody, help me. It says you have to immediately respond, right? How many people charge to go to respond to a leak? How many? Anybody charge, any company here charge to go to the responder? You'd be surprised what... Sometimes I look and talk to people and I'll pick up ideas. Sometimes I might be at a Legion club and having a beer and somebody will say something about it. And one of them was, I was sitting there and the bartender was probably 24 or 25. Well, she's probably about 28 years old, married, had 3 or 4 kids. And she said, you know, I got to go over and see my grandmother tonight. She's about 82 years old. And she says she thinks she smells gas in her house. And I said, did she call a gas company? No. Grandma's not got a lot of money, and she's living on Social Security, and she can't afford to pay much. I'm going to go over and kind of check for her. I said, it doesn't make any difference. The gas company must respond to a report of a leak, and they can't charge you. That's a requirement. They have to go there and do it. Even if it's on the house leaking, they have to determine that, and they may have to shut her off. But I said, you need to get over there, and if you think, now I understand that an old person may be a little confused, may think it's a leak, may not be a leak, but may not sure what's going on. But if you're over there and you call them, they should respond. Think that there's a leak, they should respond. Now, how many people, how many operators out here tell the general public, the affected public, that leak call, that responding to a leak report is free, absolutely free. You never say, we don't charge. We said we must respond to them. But I think that there's a perception at times that people in the world, we don't get anything for free. We don't get that for free, but in this case, they need to get it for free because it's a report for you requirement in the regulation. Correct? Anybody disagree with me on that? But yet,
what about a contractor that hits one of your lines? Can you charge to have your construction crew go out there and fix it?
He did damage the construction crew. Yes, the construction crew.
I mean, their travel time to go out there and actually fix the line.
Okay, this is
responder.
Can you repeat that?
But this is an example. Who's the green party? You, right? It's costing you money because this excavator did something wrong, right? He damaged your property, and it's costing you money. Should you not be entitled to reimbursement? Can you not then send them back out there for the damage that they did? Now, if that leak was not caused by the excavator, can you charge against him?
No.
Okay. There's. Am I clear?
Yep.
Am I accurate there?
Leonard, can you repeat that? I don't think a lot of people can hear in the back over there when somebody's
asking. Okay. The question was, can you charge? An excavator hits your line, causes a leak. There's a leak report come in. Can you charge that excavator? I'm saying that yes, you can charge. You can't charge for the leak call. You can't charge for the leak call because you had to go out there to check for the leak, and it was a leak. But what you can charge for is the excavator damaged your property and it cost you money. So therefore, should you not be entitled to reimbursement? And I think yes, you can. Send them a bill. If they don't pay it, then you go to court, you ask for litigation, the whole thing. And sometimes I realize that you say, well, it's not worth going to court for. But this excavator has hit your line 7 times in the last year. You should not go back and say, wait a minute. I am the green party. You injured me. You're costing me money. Therefore, I want reimbursement. Yes.
Does that matter if they follow the one call process and the line
does it matter
properly?
If they call the one call? Well, does it matter if they call did the one call process and everything?
And the line was marked properly and et cetera, et cetera.
Your property, you did everything correctly, right? They called in, which they did correctly. Were they careful enough to dig by your line? That's the question. If they weren't careful and they hit your line and cause you damage. Now, if they uncovered and find a corrosion leak, I think you got to pay for that yourself because they didn't cause that corrosion leak. But if they caused a puncture with a backhoe, then they probably could agree. That's a lawyer. That's what lawyers are for. But that's the reason I'm saying in generic terms, you've been damaged. It cost you money, and did they cause it? If they cause it, probably you ought to be reimbursed. Basic of the law. Now, how many people tell those little old ladies, the house owners out there, that we'll come out and check for a leak, we'll respond to a leak call for nothing? I know you don't tell them that you'll charge. But the perception's out there, and sometimes the perception is as good as fact.
Leonard?
Yes.
Another perception that's out there that affects us that we don't even realize is that a lot of the homeowners don't want to call in for a locate because they think they're going to get charged for the locate. And that's the same exact thing. It's a misconception that they feel like, well, I don't want to call in for a locate because I'm going to have to pay for it.
Correct.
And we deal with that a lot in both the states we're in. So.
Is that not what your public awareness program is supposed to be? Your public awareness program, even in the regulations of 192, it says that you need to talk to the people out there to tell them how they can learn where your pipelines are at before they excavate. And that's part of the one call, the public awareness, the 192, and everything like that. And one of the things that you have to do is tell them, be explicit on that. You know, they always say one call is it's fast, it's free, and it's a law.
I have one more question. When you were talking about some of the best information we can provide to emergency responders is, you know, a map that shows general locations and whatnot. We're all members in the four-state area anyways of a local statewide pipeline public awareness program, either the Montana Liquid and Gas Pipeline Association, North Dakota, et cetera. And we were wondering if there was some way that we could get a download on a per-county basis from the PEMA, basically an NPMS, so that we could give them those maps and even just show them, like you said, a broad overview, not really specific, because as pipeline operators, we all have our own maps, but, you know, we don't necessarily, they want one consolidated map they can look at of their county and say, where are the pipelines at? And I pointed them to the website, told them how they can download it themselves as emergency responders, and every year they keep coming back and saying, is there any way you can do that for us? Is there any way you can get that for us so we can look at it while we're here?
Probably not.
Okay.
The reason why is because the design of the NPMS is that they can go in and they can say, show me all the lines, active lines, inactive lines, whatever it is, in that county, the zip code, or I guess a county, primarily county is what it is. And you pull it up by the county and it'll give you general, it'll give you, you know what the scale is. It's about...
Yeah. That was their biggest complaint, is it's not really
visible
data, and they can't really
connect
them for
it.
But that's one reason why...
I actually
want to
look at
this. That's one reason why I'm saying that they don't need to know the exact locations of those pipelines. If it's in... I'm a volunteer fireman from Pleasanton, and I know that approximately 4 miles west, there's a transmission line that has gas in it. And it runs from kind of the southwest to the northeast. That's probably about as much as I really need to know. And if they really, what they need to know is to go out there and take a look and look for signs, just a few signs. Sometimes volunteer, or I don't want to say that, no, sometimes the local emergency response people want to be handed on a plate, and you're saying, I'm going to give you a plate that's half full, now you go out and fill the other half up. They have a responsibility to do some of their own investigation as to where it's at. And you can do it together. The sign says that, and there's the number. I really shouldn't be able to tell you that. And if it's an emergency, you know where the emergency's at. The volunteer fireman, whatever that is in that case. I don't think that... Yeah, you can get maps... But I don't think they'll do that, Albert. I think the best, I think the intent of it is, and my personal opinion is that the NPMS at that level is good enough for, because I've been a volunteer firefighter. I've been a program manager in Nebraska. I've been here looking at this now. And I think that in most cases that's adequate. I don't know why they want more. I do know some of them want to have the world do. Any questions, comments on that?
How often are these maps updated?
How often are the maps updated? They're updated as often as the operator inputs the data into the NPMS.
So we're supposed to put that data in?
What's your pipeline?
Transmission.
I didn't know we're supposed to add that.
Okay. The transmission line.
Transmission line. Yes.
Right. NPMS is a requirement for transmission. All transmission lines should be put in.
Is it true that for liquid operators, they're actually going to require an annual update when you do your annual reporting every year now? Or is that...
I heard talk of that, but I don't know that we do yet.
It's a website.
I talked to Kevin about that.
Did you? Okay.
Okay.
He was going to check it.
All right. Thanks.
I want to go back. I want to go back to you. Who do you work for?
Basin Electric.
Okay, so you're fairly new in the pipeline.
Yeah,
site,
pretty new,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. New person, new. Not trying to say that he's. If you got another question, or anything,
no, I don't.
I'm just going to carry on a little bit about this. I don't want to try to say he's. Don't want to embarrass him or anything like that. They're new operator in the pipelines, and they're normally short segments of laterals that go to ethanol plants. You know, large use customers. They come off of transmission lines. They lay in. It might be an electric generation plant. They lay in anywhere from a half mile to 10 miles of transmission line to feed their facilities. And then who operates that line? It may be the facilities that owns it and build it. But they must, number one, they must get an OPID, operator identification. You can do that by going online. And then you must submit it, your maps, to there, and there's when you go into the regulations, it tells you what you if when you go into the website, it'll tell you what you need to know and the person to contact if you're unsure. Even if the pipe, even if the transmission line is only a, supposedly a few hundred foot long, it should be on the MPMS.
And I didn't see our map, did I?
Yep.
Correct.
If the total pipeline under your OPID is less than a mile, you do not have to do an annual report.
Is that your total as an operator or your total as a transmission operator?
Total transmission line as an operator under that OPID.
So if I have distribution, but I have less than a half a mile transmission, do I have to report the transmission?
You don't have to fill out a transmission annual report. Okay, any questions on that? Let me go back through that. She's asking the question is, you have 500 miles of distribution main and 10,000 service lines, and then you have a half a mile of transmission line. You have to have an annual report on the distribution line, distribution system, and the only amount of transmission line you have is less than a mile. All, you may have a quarter mile here, a quarter mile here, and a quarter mile there. If they're all added together or less than a mile, you don't need to fill out an annual report for a transmission. And you don't pay an assessment fee unless it's at least 15 miles, I believe. That's under different people in the agency, and I can't tell you that for sure, but I think it's 15 miles. So people get all excited about, oh, man, I got to do this and do this and do this. No, the only thing you really need to do, you need an OPID so you can correspond with the federal government so you can get it in on the market system. Anybody disagree with me on getting that out to the people, the public, the affected public, about answering leak calls so that they know that they're not going to get charged? I really believe that is, to particularly old folks, people that have less resources than other people. I don't want to call them poor folks, but I'm saying that people that are very tight, are very close with their money, they need to know that. Harold Winning, I'll leave it up there. His name is he is the Community Assistance Technical Service Person. He works on this quite a bit. Harold Winning works with a variety of problems. He'll help explain right-of-way issues to people. Somebody will call up and they want interpretations on how well they want to do this with the right-of-way or they want to do that with the right-of-way, and he'll sit down and explain to them that the right-of-way issue is really a contract between you and the operator, the landowner and the operator. There are certain things he can do or must do. There are certain things you can do, and there are certain things you can't do. So we try to stay out of that. Still right there.
Okay, I thought about everything said on there.
and it's still kind of early. Nathan, what do you want me to talk about?
Anything you want.
I don't have a lot to talk about. But anyhow, the public awareness program is going to be inspected by the state and the federal people more. Go ahead, shut that off if you want. And so we need to start working your program. We need to evaluate your program, comparing it with the requirements of 1616 and 1162.